Welcome into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. It's the National Hour here. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. As we get ready for another round of action, Stanley Cup playoffs, four games on tap tonight. Can't wait to get in on all of them. But thanks for joining us on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Including tonight, a Vancouver Canuck team that would like to go up 2-0 against the National Predators. If that does happen, it will be without their star goaltender, Thatcher Demko, who is out for game two. And now, guys, questionable for the series. We heard from Rick Tocchet today, Sammy.
We did. We have a clip of him talking about this very definitively. So let's hear the clip.
Well, he skated yesterday. He's not going to play tonight. We're going to evaluate him today on something. It wasn't the old injury, and that's all I really got for you guys. You know, it's day-to-day thing.
Can you give us a sense of when it may have happened?
Yesterday, I think. I'm not quite sure. That's why I don't have a timeline exactly, so I don't want to speculate.
You said it happened. It may have happened yesterday in practice?
It might have been in the game, but I'm not quite sure because he skated yesterday. I don't have the exact timeline. That's why I don't want to speculate whether it's this time or whatever.
Rick started to give an answer, then realized he should give an unanswered, and was like, it could have been any time.
The Leafs are really happy that, like, this is like Willie Nylander again now, all over again out west. It's like the mystery injuries.
I think there's like a zombie thing going around, and like those two are the first zombies.
Rick is one of the best, most well-spoken coaches in the league.
He's like, but
he can't lie a lick.
He's so used to only telling the truth. And he's like, but on the other hand, it could have been. I mean, whenever. It could have been getting groceries.
Oh, my God.
So Casey DeSmith will be taking the reins there. He's 32 years old, a 12-9-6 record this year, an .896 save percentage. Not a bad backup goalie, as league-wide backups go. But he ain't Thatcher Demko.
I feel so bad for Canucks fans.
Like, sucks, man.
You play awesome win. The building's rocking. You know, all this momentum. Let's go.
You're cup contenders.
And your starting goal is maybe gone for the whole damn series. Great.
But not,
Okay, so Demko could be back. Demko was out March.
5 weeks.
And some are suggesting that it is the old injury.
Same knee, new injury. I don't know how big a knee is, how many things you can hurt, but I don't know. How many knee things are there?
It's very funny. One of the CLs could be bad.
I don't know.
Be one of the bones, maybe cartilage. We're not sure.
You don't want to hear about the same knee.
Do goalies need the knee that much?
It seems crucial. And I don't mean to make light of it. We just have no idea. Like, it's not good that your same knee is hurt for such an important position. So hopefully, no big deal.
Do you think the Canucks are good enough without Demko to still outlast the Nashville Predators, who looked very good in game one?
To kind of play off of what you just said, I think Casey DeSmith is like a battler. I think he battles.
Yeah.
Right? But I also have him in that Jake Allen, James Reimer, where you could maybe squeeze something out of him for 7 to 10 days, 2 weeks. But these guys have shelf lives that they can only go through a very small window, and then you hope and pray that Demko can come back at some point. And can he get through Nashville to Smith? I think he'd be capable of certainly keeping it very close or winning the thing. I think it's there for him.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that, like, there are guys like this who can play and they can win for you. Often, like, with your skaters, you'll call a guy up from the American League and he'll play 3 or 4 good games on the line. You're like, we might have something here. Mm-hmm. And then you play 10 games, like,
no, we don't have something here.
Like, you got that. You're amped up with the adrenaline. I think DeSmith is good enough to get them wins and possibly through the series. So you hope that Demko, this is like a weak thing, and you can get him back later in the series or for round two, God willing.
Yeah. Tough one.
After watching game one, I'm not giving the Predators much of a chance unless Philip Forsberg, like, catches fire here. Yeah. But I don't see a Nashville team that can push this Vancouver Canuck team, and just from what I saw in game one.
You like the Canucks D, right? Which is surprising. You just think that they're like a big group and kind of tough for Nashville to get inside
listen,
on?
Hughes will be the engine back there.
For sure.
And then if everyone can kind of hold their own, I think that at least he can go toe-to-toe with Josi. Yeah.
So Canceled. Just quickly, I know you have Rob. We got a text from Keith in Vancouver, appreciate our Vancouver listeners, saying, Casey DeSmith is a .940 save percentage in the playoffs. I'm like, I got to look this up. He played one game. He made 51. They had 51 shots against that game. So he played great, and he played one game. So .941 save percentage.
.940. Say, playoff guy.
There you go.
Okay, let's welcome in Rob Brown, former National Hockey Leaguer, big goal scorer once upon a time, but he goes way back, like my days, way back. I don't think anyone's remembering. Brownie, how are you, pal? Anybody remembering?
My mother,
my father. We remember, Rob, we remember.
I appreciate that. Very few.
The dinosaur.
It's funny, nowadays I do all these hockey schools and kids will look me up and all they ever see is Hextall chasing me down the ice or me getting knocked out in Maple Leaf Gardens. No one remembers any of the goals.
Just scored 1,000 times in the league, yeah.
You know what they remember, Brownie? 5 assists from Connor McDavid last night. It looked like the Oilers are, like, they've got something to prove here. I know L.A. touched the puck at least 4 times because they scored.
They did touch it.
But give us your overall view of the cannon that the star players led by Connor were shot out of last night.
Well, Connor McDavid's taken it to a new level this year. He's got one focus. It's on winning a Stanley Cup. They talked about it before training camp. They had captain skates where all the players came in early. Right through training camp, they talked about cup or bust. Now, they didn't get to the start they wanted, but once they got rolling, this has been the best team in the National Hockey League since November, and it's been led by their stars. It's been led by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Ekholm on the back end, Hyman, all these players. I know that, Kipper, you played on teams, and I know I have in the past, where your star players weren't always your hardest working guys in practice. That's different here in Edmonton. This team is led both on the ice, off the ice, in practice by their star players, and when your best players, the best in the world, are the hardest working ones in practice, it's very hard for any other player to slack off, and there has been no slack. This is a team on a mission right now.
So how has Zach Hyman managed to fit in so seamlessly with McDavid? Like last night, his hat-trick goal, the third one, McDavid basically uses him banks it in the net off of him. Hyman's like, thank you, hat-trick. How has he been able to have the season he's had? It's not as easy as he's made it look.
It's not. Well, first of all, on that goal, if you watch just before the face-off, they have a team meeting, and they're setting up set plays. Every time there's a face-off in the offensive zone, the Oilers have a set play off it. And on that one, Leon's pointing, okay, here's where everyone wants to go. They win the draw, and that's a tap-in for Hyman, who knew it was coming. The reason Zach Hyman's successful there, he's smart. You can't play with great players unless you understand the game. Know where you're supposed to be. Know when they want the puck. Know when you're supposed to back off, pass the puck, shoot. Hyman's very smart. He's incredibly skilled. He's deceptively fast. And I would put him in the same league as Connor and Leon is tough to get the puck off of. If he's got the puck in the corner, you're not getting around him. You're not taking the puck off his stick. But the bottom line, if you're going to play with a great player, you must be able to think the game the same way. And Zach Hyman does.
Anyone that has followed your career, Brownie, and, you know, I got a chance to compete against you once upon a time in a Max tournament in Calgary. You had it right from the get-go. I'm sure when you first put on skates, where you know where to stand, you know where to go. You have a feel for offense. You could finish plays off. You did it at every level that you played it, including in Pittsburgh for the Penguins. But, like, how does Zach Hyman now develop that from being a 20 or 30 goal scorer to a 50? Like, what are the odds against anybody learning how to be in the right place at the right time if they never really had that knack from the moment they put on skates?
He would have always had the knack. He just never had the opportunity. It's fine knowing where you're supposed to be, but if your center is so-and-so third line center or center that is an 80-point player a year, you're not going to get 50 goals. But if you know where you're supposed to be and now you're playing with Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl, now 50's attainable, 60's attainable. He's got a very high hockey IQ, and that sets him apart. There, you could put anyone with Connor McDavid, and they can have success. They can have a career year, but their career year might be 22 goals or 25 goals. For Zach Hyman in a high hockey IQ and the talent that he has, well, he could score 60 next year. He's going to get the opportunities. And this year, Connor McDavid decided he was going to pass all the time. So when he's passing all the time, you want to be his winger. And I tell you, the most popular spot in North America, if you were a hockey player a couple of weeks ago, was on Connor's wings when he was trying to get his 100th assist. He was passing all night long. No, he was not going to shoot the puck at all. So Hyman is just, he's in the right spot at the right time. The Oilers, this might be one of the best free agent signings in NHL history. They knew they were getting character. They knew they were getting work ethic. Someone that had great attention to detail. I'm not sure they ever would have imagined they would have a 50-goal scorer as well. And I don't think this was an aberration or a one-off. I think this is the expectation now for Zach Hyman over the next couple of years of this contract.
Yeah, I mean, he is a complete player. So obviously great game from him. And we're going to get to all the other Oiler pieces, including Leon Draisaitl. But I do want to ask you about the Kings a little bit. You know, and their game last night, you know, Kip joked about, yeah, we know they touched it four times. But, like, is there any glimmers of what it could look like for them? Like, when the Oilers are going like that, it just feels like, you know, the ice is tilted pretty severely the Kings' way.
Well, the problem for the Kings, when they play a very passive game against the Oilers, they're taking away any advantage they have of trying to beat the Oilers. When the Oilers build a 4-0 lead, all of a sudden the Kings started playing freer. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're down. Let's become a little more aggressive. Aggressive on the forecheck, throw pucks to the net. And they had a little more success. They were so tentative early in the game. They were so worried about the Oilers getting an odd man break, they didn't forecheck. The Oilers are top heavy. Their top nine forwards are as good as any in the National Hockey League. So if you're allowing the Oilers to break out and come through the neutral zone unimpeded and then dump it in, well, you're just asking for trouble. If you're going to beat the Oilers, you have to create turnovers in the offensive zone. The Oilers got good defensemen, but they're prone to make mistakes. Every defenseman is. And if you force them in the offensive zone, all great offensive players prefer to play in the offensive end. You don't want to play in your own zone. So if LA, any team that can beat the Oilers would have to be a team that can forecheck well. We saw that last year with Vegas. We saw that a couple of years ago with Colorado. You have to forecheck the Oilers. And if you don't, the Oilers will break you down. And we saw that last night.
We're talking to Rob Brown, former National Hockey Leaguer, now current analyst for the Edmonton Oilers for CHED. We've seen Leon Draisaitl shoot a lot of pucks off of a 4-foot goal line. And I'm just, whether you're LA or anyone else, why can't teams take this away from him? Have you ever seen anything like it?
Well, the problem is, if you're a defender, one of the penalty killers, you're thinking, okay, Leon is standing on the goal line. Okay, right now he's not in a scoring position because no other player in the National Hockey League is going to shoot from there, especially a one-timer. So we're like, okay, I'm going to take the four biggest threats away. Draisaitl's not a threat. The problem for all these teams is Draisaitl's a threat. We've seen him shoot with his feet below the goal line and one-time it, where his stick was about 2 inches ahead of the red line, and he still scored. He is the best in the National Hockey League from shooting from bad angles. I dare to say that 50% of the players in the NHL can't take a one-timer. Most of them can't take a one-timer with heat on it. Draisaitl is accurate from anywhere on the ice as anyone that's ever played the game. The LA Kings played with fire last night by taking silly penalties. You do not do that against the Oilers. They will make you pay. And the Leon Draisaitl play. If the defender moves down and gets in the passing lane or the shooting lane of Leon, that just allows a wide open space for Connor McDavid to skate in and score from his vantage point. So it's hard to defend. You just have to hope Leon misses the net. But in big moments, Leon rarely ever does that.
Brownie, you played with the Penguins in the early 90s. Mario used to hit it from down there on the other side, didn't he?
Mario could hit from anywhere. I remember, it was funny, we used to put practice and we had a goalie named Frank Pietrangelo. He was our backup goalie at the time. And at the end of every practice, Mario used to put 10 pucks on the dot. And he would take 10 wrist shots and he would score 8 out of 10 every time. And I used to make fun of Frankie. I'm like, seriously, you suck up. Just letting Mario score. And he's like, oh my God, you don't understand. I think he's going top glove. He goes down low blocker. I think he's going five hole. He goes over my shoulder. He just disguises his shot. So, yes, yeah. Mario was incredible. But Mario, a lot of the times they were wrist shots or he would take his time and he'd just pick a corner. Leon is just bombs. It's one timers that he just doesn't miss the net. Yeah. And it's just like the defenseman and the goaltender figured, okay, there's no way we're safe right now. And neither one of them could get over in time to block that. So the Oilers power play, when it's clicking, there's no one there's, you can't defend it. You can't stop them from coming in the zone because Connor's going to carry it in. And then is your, and no, Kipper, you used to penalty kill. Okay. I'm looking over here. Okay. That's where Stamkos is standing. He's going to be there the whole time, or Kucherov or Pettersson or Matthews. The Oilers power play, all five players move around and all five players are scoring threats at all time. All five players are passing threats at all time. So you're thinking, okay, I got McDavid. He's up in the top left. Next thing you look, he's down beside the post. You're like, okay, how did he get there? It's impossible to defend. And it, well, I mean, last night it was a 7-4 game. They won by 3 and they scored 3 power play goals.
And then Bush hits one 100 miles per hour. Just forget.
Well, yeah. Well, then and there's a fear factor too. You got a guy that shoots 100 miles an hour. And you're going out to block it. If I would start every power play with Bouchard taking a slap shot, A, it's going to hurt someone. B, it's going to break someone's stick. Or 3, it gets through and it goes in the net. So you got one of 3 good things to happen.
Yeah. I roomed with Frankie when I played for the Hartford Whalers. So he often reminded me, you know, he's a pretty good goalie in his Pittsburgh days too, you know, bailing out Tom Barrasso when he wasn't around.
He's known for the save in Pittsburgh.
The big save,
glove,
baby.
Against the New Jersey Devils. Yep.
Jersey Devils, of course. Outside of that, Vancouver tonight, the news of Demko out tonight. And, you know, there's a fear that he may be out the rest of the series anyways. What does that do to the mindset of the Vancouver Canucks, in your opinion?
I think they have belief in their system and they have belief in Tocchet, I think, and then they've got a goaltender that played well for them when he was thrown in there. I think what it does, it gives a glimmer of hope to other teams playing against the Canucks, though. I think Nashville right now is going to be a little more pumped up. I think if the Canucks get through this series and it's Edmonton or LA, I think there's a little more confidence for those teams. Demko's all world. He's their, most nights, is their best player. You take away the best player from any team, they're not going to be as good. So this is a, I like the Canucks. I love what they've done this year. I think Tocchet's a fantastic coach. They've got a good team. But you just took their all-star goaltender out of the lineup. That will certainly make a difference. I think they can still get past Nashville. But if you're going up against teams like Edmonton or Colorado or Dallas or Vegas or whoever, without your best player, I mean, that just makes it a little bit tougher for the Vancouver Canucks.
It does. And then, you know, for the Canucks and for the Oilers, looking ahead, and that the players wouldn't do that, but we certainly can, you know, looking at potential teams like the Jets, like Hellebuck gives up 6, Gorgiev gives up 7, Ottinger didn't look great for a stretch of it last night. You know, goaltending is such a funny part of playoffs, but is there a team amongst the West there that feels like the biggest threat to the Oilers, you know, outside of some random nights of bad goaltending in the early parts of the series?
Well, I think the Oilers got very fortunate with the way the two brackets broke up. To me, there's the top 5 teams in the Western Conference are Edmonton, Dallas, Winnipeg, Vegas, and Colorado. Edmonton is with the 6th, 7th, and 8th best team, I believe.
Yep.
So I think they've got the better side. The Oilers played Dallas late in the season, and Dallas laid a beating on them. Dallas is a good team. They're deep. The Winnipeg Jets are a deep team with very, very good goaltending most nights. Colorado, I think Colorado's in trouble. I don't know if Georgie V is going to be the answer for them in net. So I'm not sure about that. But the Vegas Golden Knights is the team that I think if they get completely healthy, and I know that Stone is back and Pietrangelo's back and Hill's back as a backup, the deeper they go in the playoffs, the better they're going to be because those players are going to get up to speed. I know that Stone looked okay in game one, and so did Pietrangelo, but they're going to get stronger. I mean, you miss 2 months. I don't care what your injury is. 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, you're a better hockey player than you were in your first game. So to me, if the Vegas Golden Knights can get through Dallas, I think they would pose the biggest obstacle for the Oilers. Having said that, if the Dallas Stars win that series, I do believe that they've got a very good team as well. They are deep through their entire lineup, and Ottinger can steal games by himself as well.
Hey, we're seeing a lot of Cookie Monsters have their way here. The coach is going to just suck the life right out of the goal scorers here moving forward.
I hope not. I love the Colorado Winnipeg first series. I love the 7-4 games. I played in an era. I played in a game when Ron Hextall chased me down the ice. I scored, I believe, the 9th goal of the game that turned out to be the game winner. And I think it made it 9-2 at the time. And I think we ended up winning 10-8 with an empty netter. So hey, I'm from an era where, you know, you just kept on scoring. You just never scored.
What was it, the Pumpernick? Was it this one right here?
It was funny. I've watched years later the video. And I'm like, I didn't do anything. I don't know why he was chasing me. Then someone showed me I scored the 8th and 9th goals. And they showed me score the 8th goal, and oh my God, I celebrated all the way to center. I think it moon danced. And I'm like, okay, I understand now why he wanted to kill me.
That's the one that got him. Brownie, great stuff, man. As always, really appreciate your time. We're going to get you back throughout the playoffs here. Great analysis on the Edmonton Oilers. Thanks, pal.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brownie.
That's Rob Brown. Could he score?
Oh, my God.
He skated like me, like a Zamboni, but he could score.
Go look at his Elite Prospects page, you at home, if you haven't. He had 173 and 212 points in the WHL back-to-back years.
Is that good?
Is that okay? And then he plays for the Penguins, 49 and 66 for 115 points 1 year, which is just an insane.
Wonder what that year would have given him on a UFA contract today.
I don't think he'd like to think about that because it's, I don't know, $12 million.
Oh, trust me. All us old guys do that.
I know my dad. What
would our best year be worth today?
Yeah.
212.
By the way, Georgie.
In 63.
Georgie the Fifth is a hilarious Gorgiev nickname because it is spelled Georgie with a V at the end. So I'm calling him Georgie the Fifth from now on, just so you guys know.
Sorry, I'm just ogling that 212. Listen,
if he has another night like game one, the Nate Dog is going to have a conniption.
The Nate Dog's going to play goal.
Yeah, the Nate Dog might go in.
He's going to put himself in.
Yeah.
Anything to win for the team.
Yeah.
He's going to be like, Gorgiev, you got to, Georgie the Fifth, you got to get on that kale pasta, please. You got to get on that chickpea pasta. Yeah. We need to cut it out. Get it going.
Listen, he better play better tonight or else he's Georgie the Fifth in the depth department next year. Okay?
That's pretty good.
Well, listen, you see Antonin is hurt, and they've got the other fella up, so it'll be the other fella real quick tonight, I think.
Yeah. All right. Game time, boys?
Game time, baby.
It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Obviously, 4 games on the go tonight. And the underdogs in the games are the Washington Capitals, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Winnipeg Jets, and the Nashville Predators. Of those 4 underdogs, most likely to win, Jets?
Jets are underdogs.
They are. They're underdogs in home ice, plus 100. I mean, even money. Underdogs compared to the Colorado Avalanche, who are minus 120.
Yeah, I think it's the Jets out of that group. I think Tampa's interesting. I don't think Florida's going to run them out of the building with a sweep. So I can see Tampa getting one tonight.
To me, that is excellent value on the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are going to be, you're going to get the A effort from them tonight, plus 150.
Can't go down too.
Veteran team. That's a big one to me.
So in 94, when we swept the New York Islanders, Steve Thomas tells me after the series, I've never played in a series where my team never touched the puck.
Just chasing you around, eh?
And I don't know. I think the Washington Capitals, I think, might be in a position here where I'm not sure the Rangers are going to let them touch much of the puck pretty in this series.
Pretty comprehensive victory in game one, I'd say. So
and I would agree.
Ovi, not a shot on goal.
And they had four power plays.
Well, I'll save my snarky Ovi comments.
Yeah.
This doesn't matter to him.
Save it.
This doesn't matter to him. These goals don't count.
Oh, my
buddy,
God.
You're talking about a decorated Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, he's got it. There's one thing left for him to do. And it's, I mean, the playoff goals don't count against the total. He's won it. So.
He's won. He's
playoff
won a cup.
Should count.
Absolutely. So the current Stanley Cup favorites updated after the first little bit of the Carolina, obviously. I guess they're the closest with the two wins. They're plus 450. Florida Panthers, plus 600. Oilers, plus 500. Rangers, plus 600 as well. And then it goes down a little bit. Canucks, plus 900. Jets, Stars. And the Toronto Maple Leafs are still 14-1 after a victory over the Boston Bruins last night.
So, are they the longest odds?
No.
Outside of Washington and Islanders?
They are not.
Okay.
Tampa, no belief. 40-1 for Tampa. The LA Kings are 50-1. Nashville is 55-1. The New York Islanders are a lot to one. And the Washington Capitals are even more to one. So,
gotcha.
I wouldn't recommend betting on those two teams.
No, don't do that.
All right. That was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
All right, let's take a quick break here and we'll come back. Still plenty to chew on, including want to get your thoughts on Mark Stone's. Clearly, he's going to need some time to get back into things.
Oh, boy.
But, a bit of an upset there. Dallas Stars lose at home.
Yeah, they're a whole new team, this Vegas team somehow.
All right. That and the Islander meltdown for JB to discuss. More when Real Kipper and Bourne return.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What was it, 12 or 14 seconds that lost the Nashville Predators lead in Vancouver in game one?
I don't even know if it was that many, was it? It was very quick.
Whatever it was, was longer than the 9 seconds last night where the Islanders had Carolina right where they wanted.
Mm-hmm. They're up 3-0. Sure were.
So this was, according to my trusted producer, it was like crack research.
Oh, boy.
The first time Patrick Waugh has ever blown a 3-goal lead, whether he was in net or behind a bench.
Sportsnet stats, so.
Regular season included?
Why don't you just give yourself credit? I just built you up.
Yeah, but you think I'm going to dig up that up? Like, I got to give my boy Stevie Fallon full props for that one.
That's wild.
There's no way you can dig that up when you're golfing, right?
I didn't golf today. I was locked in. Oh, okay. Pulling all these clips for you, buddy.
Well, let's listen to Patty Waugh on what led to the blown lead.
And for some reason, I mean, we started losing those one-on-one battles, and we didn't do a very good job along the wall to get those puck out. And he took advantage of it. I mean, on our regroup, that was the big difference, in my opinion, from this, you know, first half of the game to the second half. And their D start pinching and be heavy on those pucks, and we didn't respond to that.
Yeah, you know where it was so noticeable for me is that Sebastian Aho scores, and then there's the opening faceoff, and Islanders are on their heels.
Yeah.
Like there's almost a 50-50 loose puck, and the D just backed up.
It's like a prevent defense, right? Like they're so used to being like, okay, we have the lead. We just can't let them complete the Hail Mary, back off. And yeah, you can't give Carolina any extra ice. They dominated the league in possession and, you know, all those.
And then
they are a tidal wave team.
They
when
are.
It, like, when that speed
they can be
gets
a real hurricane.
Oh. Yeah, they could have probably used Hurricane.
Who's the D that got eaten up?
The surge of a storm.
Dobson? Was it Dobson that got eaten up by Martin Hook?
I love Martin.
Martin Hook.
I was on, I've been doing Leafs talk post-game with these boneheads.
Yeah.
Which has been,
so you were up comfortably?
Well, yeah. It started. It had been 3-1 when we came on air. ended, and they were like, yeah, Canes lose. I was like, what? So sure, Canes win.
So
what?
So let me get this straight. You and JD do Leaf Talk after every Leaf game?
We do. If you want to listen to that, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube.
You two aren't, Plus. You're not good enough? Yeah, I got to go and get JB.
So we got to bring in the big gun.
Yeah,
no, you're not going to do it. So.
Kip's smart enough to ask for money. Yeah. No, it's... It was a disappointing one for the Isles because, well, you know, seeing they're up 3-0, you start to think they could do this. You know, they're the type of playoff team that you get some goaltending and they got some veteran guys and they could shut it down. You can't. They're not beating Carolina 4-5. So that ship sailed with a 3-goal blown lead. Hate to say it, Isles fans.
Yeah, it's just crazy how much a game two can swing the feel of a series. Just, I mean, I know we're in the national hour, but.
Monster.
Think about at the end of that game, Bruins tie it, goes to overtime, you lose an OT, like the show we're having today. It's just...
It's a post-mortem on the season.
It is. Like, it actually is. Know. It's crazy how quickly playoff hockey and the narrative and how the series feels changes.
Best of seven's a long series. It's so short.
Yeah. Particularly when you feel one team's better, like Carolina. You know, like, once they go up, it's like, yeah, if the Isles had a 2-0 lead, we'd be talking different, but that ain't the way it is.
Mm. All right, let's jump into Vegas. Dallas,
Mr. Game One.
Can you believe this?
Mark Stone makes his presence
90
felt
seconds in. Is it 90 seconds into the game?
Authority.
Just a sick tip from the high slot pulls it through Ottinger's armpit.
Would you like to hear Pete DeBoer on his thoughts on the Golden Knights?
Yes, very much.
I mean, I think as advertised, you know, good team. You know, obviously, the additions make a difference for them for sure. You know, I thought, you know, if you're going to knock off the Stanley Cup champions, you're going to have to, you know, bring your A game every night. And, you know, I just thought tonight we did some decent things. We did some things well, but we were chasing the game the whole night from the first shot of the game on. So tough to play from behind against that team.
Okay, there was... A little bit of a message to his goaltender, I think I heard there.
Did you?
Interesting. I heard him taking a total
right from
shot.
The start. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I think I didn't watch this game from start to finish, but certainly, you know, where I stand with Jake Oettinger having to be the difference maker here. So, you know, from the goals that I picked up on the highlights, tracking pucks and still maybe an issue that he had earlier in the year.
Yeah. God, Dallas must have been watching those last couple games of the regular season just going, oh, come on. You know, really? You're going to give us Vegas at the end?
Yeah.
The other thing worth noting is Dallas gets it back to 4-3.
Did you see the goal? The one that went through Logan Thompson was like the Mason Marchment wrist shot from... Yeah. A step inside the blue line, clean.
Not great.
Really bad.
But so they get back in the game, and they have an opportunity in the dying seconds to get a shot, and diving to get a piece of his skate and block it. Mark Stone blocks the final shot to end the game.
Really good at both ends of the ice.
And what Hurdle have? I mean, I don't know his numbers were, but...
God, he looks big and strong, doesn't he? Did you see him go to the net?
He's
not
huge.
He's huge.
He looked even bigger in gold, I think.
Yeah. No, that Vegas team is no joke. And if Oettinger's not great, that could be a hell of a series.
Yeah.
We also did get a clip from Mark Stone, his thoughts on playing game one.
Yep. Mark, obviously, you probably heard the boos all night. First couple of touches, they booed you. And then to quiet them with that goal, I guess, one, how did you feel about that moment? Two, how did you feel about your game overall?
Yeah, it was a big goal for us. You know, get off to a good start on the road. That's key. You know, power play clutched up for us tonight. Got two big goals for us. Get off to that a good start, get the chemistry there. You know, obviously I haven't played a lot of hockey in the last 2 months. Been on the ice, but the games are different. Not just jumping into a preseason game in September. I'm playing a playoff game in April, so you got to be ready. But I don't know. I guess they don't like me.
Did he say they didn't let me play hockey the last 2 months?
He didn't say that directly. He said he's been on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. I had a friend text me today to be like, way too many smart people are saying that the Knights, that this is okay because it's within the rules or whatever. And it's like, his point was, if you have to lie about the status of someone like Mark Stone, who presumably could have played maybe a week before the end of the season, then it's not within the rules. Then you have to be dishonest to get away with it. So you can understand Dallas fans being like, we think this is a little suspect. It's a legitimate place to boo. So good for you, Dallas Stars fan.
Oh, and they let him have it with Leah Hextall's ESPN.
Yeah. Post-game, yeah.
I actually, every time I watch a Dallas game, they seem to have a really good fan base there. Like that crowd really into it, and they got the towels and the, I don't know what they do when they, but they do, they do like a thing after every goal. Like they really do seem to be an engaged fan base. They've had a lot of good teams there.
Just put a team in Houston.
I'd like to go to a game there. I'd like to go to Dallas.
Don't you want to maybe just do that interview like somewhere?
What an odd place to loud public interview to like, the opposing like fans with the bad guy.
There's a tunnel right there.
I get it that like it adds to the storyline and the
actually a great point. It's good for you're selling. Black hat.
But I will say this. Like if I'm George McPhee or McCrimmon, I'm like, I don't want my player subjected to that.
No.
Like,
get him out of there.
By the way, Mark Stone is impervious to any feeling of, like, shrinking. He was, like, loving it.
But,
like,
I mean,
all it takes is some goofball to throw something. The lights are kind of low, you know? It's like, I'm not having my player out there.
Especially because he spent
hammered.
Especially because he spent 6 to 7 more minutes sitting at the podium to do it again. So it's like, you couldn't have just, I don't know. I agree with you, actually, Kipper. But he loved it.
I like that he did it. I like that the league is cool with it. But yeah, if you're on his PR department, you're like, maybe that's not
No, that's my star player. I'm not having.
God, he's such a stud, boys.
Huh?
I love Mark Stone, man.
I just like wish I had an ounce of that.
Do you remember what he got traded for from Ottawa?
I can look it up.
Brännström.
Also, by the way.
Was it Brännström?
Brännström. I'm sure there's a first involved.
Was he the key in that one?
It may have been the pick. That was the key. Brännström was the big
one. One of the picks must have turned out to be a good one.
Do you know the answer to this?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't remember.
There's no chance
it did. I'm just wondering.
Traded from the Ottawa Senators with Tobias Lindberg to the Golden Knights for Oscar Lindberg, Erik Brännström, and a second-round pick that turned into Igor Sokolov.
Oh, my God. That's a lawyer, isn't it?
It's the Sokolov commercials.
You got traded for a lawyer?
He did.
Yeah. I mean, Sokolov.
Eugene needed some legal representation.
Sokolov lit up the AHL this year, boys. So he was great.
All right.
That was a horrific trade.
Awful.
My poor Sens fans.
Awful.
Wow.
By the way, Thomas Hertl, 6'3", 215.
Yeah, he's a lot of guy.
Big boy.
Yeah.
And he looked huge last night.
All right.
All right, did you say that you expect Tampa and Florida to even their series tonight?
John Cooper, the master tactician. I really kind of wish at times we were either a Tampa or a Florida podcast so we could cover this series of
the
coaches.
So no one would listen?
Listen.
That's a great point.
Yeah. But for our 28 listeners, that'd be great.
We would get the two coaches, the dream coaches, though. We should really just have this show and clip their coaches a lot.
Maurice was got to ask about the power play of Tampa, and that's something that we always talk about, what makes it great. And he gave just an excellent Paul Maurice answer on their power play. So you want to listen to it?
Let's do it.
Clip one.
Yeah, I don't do the penalty kill. don't take many would be my advice, because you're not. I mean, they're just so dynamic. It's a function of incredible players, but they've played together for so long. They're just reacting, not just on what they see. They're reacting on their history of things they've done, they've had success with. So they have so many options every time each one touches the puck. I think they're the best team at fakes, at the shot fake, where you bite on the shot and it goes back into the seam or it goes back over across the top. They're so good at it. So it's going to be shot lanes and goaltending, and then be as aggressive as we possibly can in the times that we can be aggressive. They're the first one. It really wasn't a place to be aggressive, really, because they had kind of complete control of it, and we sat in there. And it's not what we want to do, but that's what you got to do when they got control of that puck.
Okay, they aren't the best at it. Kucherov is the best at it.
Yeah. I
just thought that's just like he basically gave the takes that we've talked about on this show for 3 years watching the Lightning, and I loved how he talked about it, so put it in there.
I also, you know, nowadays, I think to be a great coach, you have to, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, have other people in your staff, defer to them. So he says, I don't do the penalty kill. And I believe him. You know, you have to trust that other people, whoever the coach is that does, can do it. And there's too many things to look at. So,
but you know that, like,
you're on the
hook. Making $4 million, and the other guy's making like Sammy money, right?
So
yes, like, when it's
failing, you step in and go, okay,
exactly.
We need this. I'm at the end of the day, I'm on the hook for this. It's not working, but as long as it's working, you just go, I don't know, he does it,
but
I do other things.
I would seriously consider just taking away Kucherov and just go 4-on-3 somewhere else.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, buddy, but there's the Braden Point.
There's
a guy that hits the best one-timers of all time,
If you're going to beat me on a power play, you got to beat me on the other side.
There was a... So when I was with Sheldon's staff in the American League, Scott Gomez was down there, and Scott Gomez played the half wall for, I think it was Hartford at the time. And one of the best passers of his era, but he doesn't shoot it. So we literally just would back off him and let him have it. Let him have it out there on the half wall. The problem with Kucherov is he will cook it by your goaltender's ear too. You know, so you're right. Like, you do kind of have to be all over the guy because he can beat you either way. If you back off, he'll shoot it in. If you're aggressive, he'll pass it around you. I mean, that's how you get 150 points in a season, 144.
Jets looking to take a 2-0 series lead on home ice tonight. Is this on the hands of Makar and the Nate Dogg, Rantanen? I mean, those are your three guys here.
So Jets have their hands full because they're going to get the absolute Nolan Ryan fastball from Colorado tonight. I do want to give a shout out to their fans. What a showing in game one outside the building and everything.
I'm glad you brought this up.
Okay.
Before we get into the game tonight.
That shot's incredible, of their alley. Oh,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, pretty good outside. There's 1,000 people outside our Scotiabank Arena jumping around. Whether it's not good enough because they're not wearing white. Like, they're jumping around pretty good, too.
By percentage of population, we're less impressed.
I think, you know, you talk about pressure on players coming home. There's pressure. I think with all these other Canadian markets in the playoffs, absolutely electric crowds. With Vancouver, their crowd looked amazing. Of course, Winnipeg with their crazy crowd. Edmonton buzzing last night. Ton of pressure on the old Scotiabank Arena suits coming home here.
Great point.
There really is. Yeah. Like, you need that place to be rocking, or else the jokes, which, you know, are low-hanging fruit at the best of time where people
get earned.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, the fans. Like, yeah, great. When's the next? Is it a playing the parade joke next? Like, give me a break. But big pressure on the fans to be loud in game three.
Yeah.
Big pressure after watching the rest of the Canadian markets. Anyways, go back to the game.
Don't go down 2-0.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Need an early one. Need an early one.
That'd be really good.
All right, let's
go ahead.
We'll get to Rick Bonus. Sammy, did you clip Rick?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, let's have a listen to the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
You don't want, like, sometimes you win games and you walk away, wow, that's great, we won. But you also have to be very honest about how you played. And our guys have been very honest about that. So we're thrilled that we won. We needed to get that win, and we got it. We'll take it any way we can get it, right? But again, at the same time, you have to be honest with your assessment that that's the best game Colorado has played against us in the 4 games we played them, by far. You give them a lot of credit. They played an outstanding game. They worked and they were on top of us. They didn't give us a lot of time. So give Colorado a lot of credit. And that being said, we know we can play better against what they threw at us.
Didn't think I'd be saying this, but, you know, Jonathan Drouin not in the lineup, it's kind of maybe throwing a bit of a curveball here because he was so good for so long with that line.
Yeah, he became an important part of that team. He's one of those guys that can play
really
with elite talent. And, you know, he seemed to find his confidence again and certainly makes a difference for a team whose depth you question at times.
I mean, he had 56 points this year. He played really good bounce back season. And clearly the Moosehead connection with McKinnon, they played together in junior, like there's a familiarity there. Mm-hmm. So you got the best out of him, but you're right. Missed them big time.
I would take, you know what's interesting is I would take the Avalanche's bottom six versus most teams. Like, I like Miles Wood is big and fast, and Colton, I like the way he's Trennan and Duhaime. I like a lot of their guys. Kiviranta, genuinely like them. Winnipeg is so well suited to handle them, though.
Yeah.
Like, just the depth that the Jets have up front, it's just Winnipeg may be a really bad matchup for this Avalanche team.
Well, it's not like they didn't go out and trade for pieces that are supposed to help them win the Stanley Cup. Like, they, some of those names you just mentioned, they paid a big price.
For sure. But, you know, the Jets have Namestnikov on the fourth line. You know, mm-hmm. he gets one look and blasts one home in game one. He's an excellent player for me as a fourth line guy.
So even that, again, like, I don't think people pay attention enough what a good stick does. Mm-hmm. So Namestnikov scores that second goal, I think,
yeah.
in the game. Go watch Iafallo's stick that goes from a deep pass up the wall to a good stick where the puck bounces right on his stick and he hammers it home.
Yeah.
Like, to me, the overemphasis sometimes is body and running it. And I get it. I get that whole theory that, you know, a hit today means you cash it in game six or seven. Yeah. I get all of that. But if you don't have good sticks, taking away good lanes, forcing shots on the outside, but a good stick... Mm-hmm. is just as much as important as running a guy 3 feet into the stands.
Well, it's, you know, to take it to the extreme, that's what Zdeno Chara was at 6'8", where it's just in your area where you're trying to stick handle, good stick on the puck. And, you know, they have a bunch of guys, you know, Lowry and Appleton, the way they get after the puck. You know, even Scheifele, I like the way he turns pucks over. So they just have a lot of guys, yeah, to your point, Kip, that
has anybody made a better trade than Cheval Dayoff made for Dubois?
Hey, unbelievable. You know, Dubois scores last night, yeah. the worst goal anyone's ever scored. Yeah. It's a non-goal.
Laffer.
Even if he was excelling in Los Angeles and being the guy they thought they were getting.
Velarde is so good.
So good.
Iafallo, so good. They really got Kumpari in that trade, like, and a second-round pick.
This is where I don't understand it. Like, I know you're L.A. and you'd want the guy today, but you're also 12 months away from getting him for free. He was UFA at the end of the following season.
Did they just feel like they couldn't get him?
I don't know. But, like, you gave up some good pieces here.
Well, to your point, if you could have waited and then add him to the guys we just listed off. And you know what's rare, too, about this whole trade is, like, you know, Chevy's hand was forced. You know, you don't see many GMs have success in those situations.
Like, hit a home run when it's an 0-2 count, yeah. and you hit a home run on a slider.
You often get back, you know, Uyghur and Huberto for Tkachuk.
Who made
you know?
That trade?
Correct. Hmm. But, you know, it's not like that was a terrible trade by any stretch. Just, you know, it's you're in a tough spot.
Yeah.
So there it is. So tonight, big games around the NHL.
Can't wait for Jets Avalanche. I'm all in on this series.
Jets is the feature attraction tonight.
All in.
Tampa, Florida at 7:30.
Give me a score.
For Jets, Ike Avs, get them tonight.
You do, I?
4-3.
I'm going to take a lower scoring game, 3-2 Jets again. I say again because they win again.
I'll take 4-3 Avs. I think it's 1-1 here.
It does seem unlikely that this series is short.
I don't see it as a short series, but... Yeah, see what happens. Yeah. Florida, Tampa, guys, 1-1 or 2-0?
I'm taking Tampa tonight.
I think maybe 2-0.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I think maybe 2-0.
Canucks in Nashville, 1-1?
Nope.
2-0?
Canucks get another one.
Yeah. Okay.
Not so sure.
I'll go 1-1 because I picked Nash as an upset, but I don't believe it for 1 second.
Canadian homer today right here. Love it.
All right, our thanks for Rob Brown contributing to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Outside of that, 4 fantastic games. Pick your game, and let's all get together this time tomorrow and revisit them on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Have a great night, everybody.